And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this show, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on issues of fatherhood and masculinity. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and with me in the studio today is Ken Thompson.
Hi, Bill, and hello to everybody listening.
And our guest today is Matt Barwick, and Matt is going to be talking to us about his book, Life in Limbo, My Battle with Depression, Infertility, and Mental Illness. Matt is a Canberra man, and he was born and raised in Canberra. He's worked for over a decade for the Australian government, and he was motivated to share his unique story when he realised how few titles there are from young, average Australian males in all these topics. Matt has been on an extraordinary journey. Matt, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Bill. How are you?
Well, thank you. So, Matt, when you wrote this story, or when you decided that you should write this story, what were you hoping to get out of sharing your story in this way?
Yeah, well, I mean, interestingly, initially it came out of me writing a personal diary. I found that my wife and I were struggling with some infertility battles and found there wasn't really much of a resource out there for males. So I really found the guide for me was to become a bit introspective, and I started to write a daily diary. And then as that kind of progressed, I never really thought about it never getting published, I suppose, and then it kind of turned into a bit of a book, and my expectation, I suppose, initially was I thought it might at the very least just get something that I might show to my friends and family and get them to read, or maybe at the very best maybe publish as an e-book. But the thing kind of grew from there, and it is now available as a book. And I suppose the main motivation for writing it was to give other males some insight into the infertility issues from a male perspective and give them a resource and encourage men to open up and communicate more on issues of infertility and also other issues of mental illness and depression.
Yes, you cover that in your book at one stage when you talk about man-to-man communication, and you see there's a gap there in the way that men speak to each other. I think even with, say, I think you talk about even with your own father, you didn't really talk so much about the deeper important issues.
No, I think that's fairly right. And I, you know, initially searched online thinking, well, there must be some kind of website or blog where blokes are talking about these issues, because, you know, when couples suffer infertility, you know, it's a 50-50 thing, and men struggle with it as much as women do. But, I came across umpteen websites on DIY things, how to fix the fence and how to do this and that, but there wasn't anything really out there for blokes talking about these issues one-on-one and getting to the depths of how they're feeling about things and some of the things they were struggling with at the time.
Yes, well, for the first, 19 chapters, you were talking mainly about these infertility issues, and this started when you thought the two of you decided, well, now's the time, and then but you had to first wrestle with when is the perfect time to get pregnant. And I think a lot of couples, a lot of men in particular, struggle with that question. So that was the first question you had to resolve, wasn't it?
Yeah, certainly. It's certainly a life-changing thing. But I suppose as a male growing up, and as most people, you just assume that one day you will be a father if that's what you want and there won't be any issues. But in actual fact, we found our journey to be a lot more difficult, and we probably struggled for a good couple of years, at least initially, not really knowing what was going on. And then when we got down the path of some assisted fertility treatments, we kind of went through the whole box and dice.
Oh, you certainly did.
Thinking initially that IVF wasn't for us, and trying other treatments early on, but eventually getting onto IVF at the very end. And, yeah, so it was quite a long process. It took about 5 years in all.
So going back to that start, did you come to a conclusion on when is the perfect time? I mean, should you get all your finances in order, get all your travel done, all those sorts of things? Is that?
Look, I think some people have spreadsheets and they have reminders pop up and say, oh, okay, now time to have the kid. And I certainly have friends in that category, and I almost put myself in that category as well, I suppose. But look, life throws up all sorts of challenges, and you know, there's never a perfect time. And I think you've got to talk to your partner, and in essence, and not all births and conceptions are planned, I suppose. So yeah, these things just happen sometimes.
I saw in your book that you'd set yourself a target of about 30, but things started to happen for you at about 28, if my memory serves me correctly.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I ever had a target in mind, Ken, but yeah, certainly there was an expectation that when, you know, in your early, mid, later 20s, it's not necessarily the thing for everybody to become a father. I think the attitudes are changing a bit from what I hear. People, generation behind me, are getting married a fair bit younger, and not having to have ticked all those boxes, as you say, and travel the world and done all these things and secured their job. Some of the family values are kind of starting to ring true a bit more in the younger generation, which is an interesting kind of turnaround.
Yes, I think you raised the question, do you have to grow up first? I think my experience, Ken might support me on this, but I think having a child forces you to grow up very quickly, doesn't it? So having made that decision that you were going to have a child, that was really the first of your series of battles, wasn't it? Because instead of it just being the natural thing and it'll happen very quickly, it didn't happen.
No, that's certainly the case. And different people have different timelines on which they kind of operate in that regard. And we thought, oh, we'll give it a few months, and that turned out to be many months and then almost a couple of years. And certain couples might think after a couple of months of trying and there's a problem and seek medical intervention. We didn't probably go down that path straight away, and we thought we had time up our sleeves because we weren't, you know, overly old, and we considered ourselves to be quite young. When in actual fact, yeah, with all the time that it took and all the different treatments that we had, we ended up being, you know, in our mid 30s when we ended up having kids, which isn't young at all really these days.
Mm. And did it put a strain on your relationship, do you think, the fact that you two of you weren't able to have this pregnancy?
Yes, it certainly did. It's probably made our relationship stronger now, but at the time it was really quite a challenge. I mean, it's really reflected in the title of the book. We found that we really were living a life in limbo. You want to make plans. You make a lot of decisions about where you live, the job you have, what you want to do in the next, you know, 6, 12, 18 months, 2 years, looking forward. And if it does or doesn't involve kids, then we found we couldn't plan for holidays and things of that nature. And just also not knowing what your life is going to hold moving forward, I guess, is a difficult kind of and different perspective to have. And hence the kind of term life in limbo. It was certainly a struggle in our relationship.
You then started exploring other options, which you initially had some reluctance to even explore those other options.
Yeah, when you say other options, referring to life without kids or other options in terms of trying to pursue kids?
Well, look, I suppose both. I mean, first of all, you explored or thought about it, at least. Maybe you should just look at life without children, and I guess that's what people do, but what was important to you about becoming a father?
Oh, and that's a pretty big question. I mean, I still, now that we're fortunate enough to have a child through the IVF process and we feel very blessed to have little Oliver, I still look back and I do kind of pinch myself and find myself to be really lucky to be in this situation to be a father, but I had got to a point where I was going to accept the result either way, and if I wasn't going to be a father, I was going to be the crazy great uncle to all my nieces and nephews and surround myself with kids and still try and be the big kid that I like to be and have fun with lots of people. But again, I really wanted to be, and my wife wanted to be a mother, and I really wanted to be a father, but these, it was really out of our control, and in many respects we feel we fluked it, and hence the reason why we're quite happy not to try again, even though we had some of all these brothers and sisters in the freezer. We only recently made a decision to give those up. We had them in storage. It's a difficult thing when you're really struggling with infertility and something that comes so easily and is such a natural process. We found so difficult to the point where we as a couple felt we couldn't. It's the wanting and the not having and the desire and the yearning that really takes up so much of your energy and affects your relationship. We felt we couldn't go through that again and try for a second. But that was kind of the motivation, I suppose, was to just at least try all those scientific avenues once we were kind of down that path. And if that didn't work for us, we did have an endpoint. I suppose it was partly financially driven too. We were probably getting at the end of our ability to afford these treatments. We had went through 10 different kind of treatments over a five-year period, and that can certainly take its toll.
Yes, we might take a short break now, and we'll come back and discuss some of the other hurdles that Matt Barwick, author of Life in Limbo, My Battle with Depression, Infertility and Mental Illness. This is a song called That's How Strong My Love Is by Otis Redding. That was Otis Redding singing a song that I hope is appropriate for our topic today when we speak about Matt Barwick, author of Life in Limbo, and his wife, who we read all about in the book, his wife Ali. So, Matt, we've talked about the infertility. Then there was another cataclysmic event in your life, which you didn't realise at the time, but you talk in some detail in the book about your brother, Stephen. I wonder if you could just take us through that again as to, you know, what happened and what the effect was on you.
Sure. Well, during this whole process of my wife and I trying for kids, we did have a very tragic episode in my life and my family's life, in that my brother unfortunately and unexpectedly committed suicide at age 33. He was suffering from depression, and although this wasn't known by many, myself included, so it really came as a shock, and as a suicide almost always does, I suppose. And, yeah, that kind of had shockwaves through our family and me in particular. I really didn't know how to take it. He was my only brother, and we were best mates. And having him here one day then gone the next, I really found I didn't cope with it at all well. And maybe with a combination of all the issues that I was going through with the infertility concerns, I pretty much was diagnosed with a mental illness. I suffered from bipolar as a result, and I found myself actually in a mental institution for a week or so, a couple of weeks, and fortunately the medication worked quite well for me. I only had one lapse of really deep depression where I did contemplate suicide myself, but fortunately I got on medication early, and the right medication for me, which is always a difficult challenge. And
do you think you had a predisposition to this bipolar before all these terrible things happened?
My dad suffers from bipolar, and typically it's a big stressful event that can cause the onset, and certainly the loss of my brother was very much that. So there was certainly a family history there, but up until that point, and I was, you know, in my early 30s, I hadn't experienced any form of depression or mania.
Matt, were you on the lookout for this for any symptoms that might occur, having, you know, with your father having suffered from it already?
Oh no, look, I suppose that's probably, again, gets down to the main motivation for me wanting to write the book. My father and I didn't really speak about his illness very much at all. And in actual fact, it was kind of not kept away from me, but I mean, certainly my father was diagnosed in the 70s and 60s and 70s when mental illness wasn't nearly as well recognised and well understood as it is today. And there's still stigma today regarding mental illness, and I can just imagine there would have been so much more back then. So it wasn't something we openly talked about as a family. We do now. My father and I are very close, and particularly having lost my brother, and it's kind of brought the family unit together, and we do talk about things. But that was a real motivation for me, again, writing the book, was to get these things out in the open. And I firmly believe that if my brother had spoken up more about his depression, that he would be here today. And so I thought, look, what can I do as an individual to try and make some good out of this horrible event? And I was really spurred on and motivated to write the book to try and help others in a similar situation to educate people to talk up, and blokes in particular, to talk up about their mental health.
Yes. Do you think men see depression perhaps as a sign of weakness, and that's why they don't talk about it?
I know it's often the term that's kind of bandied around. I suppose so. I talk about it a bit in the book. I mean, it's like you have a broken arm. There's a visible thing there. It heals. You move on. People often say, "Oh, you know, just get a snap out of it." But I can tell you, and speaking from experience, having been in a deep depression, it is an uncanny, deep, dark, lonely place, and it is a chemical imbalance. And I think people need to realise that and give people the respect that they deserve who have these illnesses and all types of mental illness. And I think it's getting better. And I think we've still got a long way to go. And you know, I commend organisations like Beyond Blue and things of that nature, and Movember and those kind of initiatives. I think there's also a risk that those kind of initiatives are becoming so mainstream that sometimes we're forgetting some of the underpinning reasons for doing those things. But I think the money raised is certainly going to a good place, and that's, you know, can only be encouraged.
Yes, I think you are sharing some of the royalties from the sales of this book with charities.
Yes, both Beyond Blue and SID for Kids, because during our infertility journey, we did lose, we had a stillbirth at 22 and a half weeks, baby Isabel. And so, yeah, I've been donating a third of my royalties both to SID for Kids and another third to Beyond Blue.
Both great causes. Now, I think although you've had these things happen, you've also been blessed with your wife, Ali, because, I mean, in the suicide episode that you mentioned briefly, if she hadn't been there, who knows what might have happened as a result.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I was fortunate because she was there at the time when I really had that fight or flight moment, and I wanted to get out of there and try and end my life. And fortunately, I spoke up about it at the time. It's not easy to do, and I think maybe partly the reason was because I'd just gone through witnessing what happened in the aftermath of losing my brother, and that just kind of was just in. Even though I knew that, I was still willing to contemplate suicide. But fortunately, I told her, and then she quickly helped me get medical assistance, and I was lucky because some people struggle to find antidepressants that work for them. There are so many. And there's so many variations, but I was lucky that one worked for me pretty quickly, and I'm still on bipolar medication to this day, but I'm a firm believer in looking after my physical health as well. I think that really flows on to your mental health, so I keep a pretty strict exercise routine, and I'm a passionate surfer, and for me that's kind of have your passions and to keep those in your life helps you have a good healthy mind and body.
Listen, look, I think that's one of the main messages that comes out of the book. I mean, you are currently, you're healthy. I mean, you never take these things for granted, I'm sure. But you've stayed on the medication, you've looked at your exercise programs, you're wary of events that might tip you over. Is that the message you're getting out to people, that if they have got this condition, there is light at the end of the tunnel, but, you know, you've got to look after yourself?
Certainly. You need to find that thing that really lights your fire and that you're really passionate about and concentrate a lot of your energy in that area. And again, when you're feeling good, don't assume that, oh, I can go off the medication. I'm fortunate that I don't seem to be getting any side effects, and, you know, eating well, sleeping well, you know, laughing, having fun, you can be the same person you were before being diagnosed, and there are many people out in the public domain who you know, do extraordinary things with bipolar. And you know, unfortunately, we lost one of our own, as I say, in the great comedian who recently passed away, Robin Williams.
Robin Williams, yes.
He was a dear sufferer of bipolar, and I used to look up to him. But yeah, it just goes to show that it's a balancing act, and it's on the tip of an knife edge at times, and you just need to keep a constant kind of vigilance with your how you're feeling day to day, and kind of monitor that. But you can lead a happy and healthy life.
Hey Matt, could you explain how you motivated yourself to get out and exercise when you were in such a deep depression? Because most people who are in a depression simply can't do anything. All they want to do is just stay in bed and stay away from the world. But you've been able to overcome that. Could you explain how you did that?
Yeah, look, there's no easy answer there. And again, I was fortunate. I think it's all about, from my perspective, again, and I'm no expert, I can only speak from my experience. I found it was about having that tipping point. I think you're right. When you're in that deep, dark depression, you can't do anything but, you know, rolling out of the bed in going to the toilet is like too much of effort, pretty much. But it's recognizing when you see a slight shimmer of light in the distance, and you can see 1 ounce of motivation when you normally would have 100%, is to then just grab onto that and go for a walk around the block, and then the next day walk around the block a little bit further, and the next day maybe if it's your thing, go for a swim and do half a lap, and then the next day do 2 laps, and then slowly when you're doing that exercise with your medication and eating well and sleeping well, your endorphins will kick in, and it's a matter of using those to help you through, I think, as well. It's definitely not something you can just go full ball, you know, holus bolus, and think you can overcome this thing, as they say, snap out of it in a week. It's all about incremental improvement to a point where the imbalance tips in your favour and you feel more positive thoughts than negative thoughts.
It's those little steps.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a lot of great advice from Matt Bowick, and we recommend the book Life in Limbo, My Battle with Depression, Infertility and Mental Illness. Now, Matt, we always ask our guests to pick a song. Can you tell us which song you've picked and why you've picked it?
Sure. I've picked a bit of a classic from a little band. You might have heard of them, called The Beatles. I think they were big back in your day sometime.
Yeah, you've got me in one.
And the song's called Come Together.
And I think you mentioned something about your father.
Oh, no, actually, well, it's more so much one of my fondest early parenthood experiences, I guess. It was when little Ollie was about 2 and he was starting to exert his independence. And I used to have this song playing in the car a fair bit, as you do on CDs, and I'd often sing it to him. And he was getting pretty good at singing along some of the lyrics. And some of his first words is from some of this song. And then one day we were watching television, and he picked up the television remote. He was motioning to throw it at the television, and I went, "Put that down!" That was my first bit of kind of... He'd been a really good kid up till that point. I thought, this is my first bit of parenting, let's see what happens. And I said, "Put that down right now!" And then I hear this over me, and my wife starts laughing. I'm like, "Oh, I can't let this expression change on my face, otherwise he'll think this is an important thing, and he can throw this remote at the television." And it was from the Beatles lyric, and where it goes, "Come together right now over me." And my son had gone, I'd gone right now, and he'd gone over me. And we were all trying to hold in our laughter. So whenever I hear the song and it comes to the chorus, we can't help but all have a bit of a chuckle.
That's a great story. And that was Come Together by the Beatles. We'd like to thank Big Sky Publishing, and we have a copy of the book, Life in Limbo, to give away to a lucky listener today. So go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, send us an email telling us where you heard the show, and we'll be in touch. And if you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au. And in the meantime, it's goodbye from us, and we want to thank once again our guest, Matt Barwick.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Matt. And so Ken Thompson and I were saying goodbye for this week.
Thanks, Bill. Bye, Matt.